Or and Sam, who else do we are we still waiting for one or two of the experts to be confirmed?
We've confirmed with Matt, and sorry, I'm just looking for his surname because I can't remember it. Matt Connell from the CII is
Right.
confirmed, and we've also got Lauren Garrett, who is the financial services manager at Surviving Economic Abuse.
Okay, and there is one more party we're waiting
One
for a
more that we're
recon.
hanging on for,
Yeah,
yep.
okay, good. Right, so I would strongly urge you, as I say, to try and get your compliance people to come along to that one on the 9th of January. I think it will be an incredibly useful session with some really valuable learnings on avoiding economic abuse. And I see that Sam's just popped that link from Amanda's piece into the chat. If you haven't read it yet, really worth reading. Good. Well, that's probably a point for me to stop talking about future and events and start talking about the event we are running today. I just need to go through the housekeeping as normal. So, Competition Act reminder, we always have to flag it up. I don't anticipate that we will get into anything relevant to the Competition Act today, but if you think we do, please draw it to attention, the attention of whoever's chairing the session at that time. That will either be Joe for the first session, me for the second, and we should then point the discussion in another direction. If we don't, you need to drop off the call, but I don't anticipate you will need to do that. We're all using Teams. Hopefully by now we're very conversant with it. It's really just a matter that everyone, that our dear friends in Seattle have a habit of releasing different functionality at different time. And you know, so we all might have slightly different versions. Key things, we absolutely encourage everybody to join the conversation. If you would like to join the conversation, either click on the raise your hand icon, which I'm just doing now, so you should see that appear on my screen, and then I can take it, or put a comment in the chat. We always find with these sessions, the chat is another very valuable way of people sharing views, and Joe and I will bring people into the conversation who put views in the chat as well. If you're not actually speaking, if we could ask you to mute yourself. And then the last thing really is making sure, and I think everyone's following this now. We did have a few sessions where people had third-party AIs transcribing. We transcribe and will publish the full session on Protection Guru in a couple, in the next week to 10 days. That said, if you're talking and you say something that you think maybe I went a little bit too far and you want us to redact that from recording, please get in touch with us as soon as possible and tell us that, and we will do that. But we can't have third-party AIs because it's a recording the session because it's a GDPR breach. When we invite you all to this meeting, you all give us consent for recording. Anybody else joining the meeting who hasn't gained that consent, as I say, it would be a GDPR breach. So today, I'll just quickly go through the attendees. We have two parts to the discussion today. First bit is what did we do well in 2024? Joe's going to lead that for you. Second part is going to be what are we wishing for in 2025? Both of these are usually a very vibrant discussion. At that point, I will hand over to Jo to introduce her panelists, and I'll talk to you more in about 45 minutes' time. Over to you, Jo.
Thank you. December Forum, my favourite, like Ian said. I'm sure it's going to be quite a lively discussion. So, just very, very conscious of time. We're going to start looking at on the first half, as Ian mentioned, how did we do in 2024? So, I am going to hand over first of all to the lovely Scott Taylor Barr, who is on my right-hand corner, principal of Barnsdale Financial, to share with us his views on what he feels went well. So over to you, Scott.
Thanks, Jo. Hello, everybody. What did I think went well? I think we talked a lot about improvements across the advice space and across protection in general. I think advisors and insurers generally worked very collaboratively. I'm going to include in there IT as well. You know, things like the CI Expert report, stuff that we've had from PG Pro, from Protection Guru as a whole. The whole piece has felt like we've all been pulling together in the same direction to help clients. So that's felt really good. It was also good that where we did have issues, unlike in previous years, I don't think anyone turned on each other particularly harshly. It didn't feel like people were trying to rip chunks out of another part of the industry. I think people had their feet held to the fire when they needed to be, but it was all done quite professionally. And I don't think anyone was at war with anybody, which was quite nice. There was lots of listening to customers. And I think this stems from Consumer Duty coming live. There's a lot more discussion about, you know, what's right for the customer, what gets the customer to the right place. And I think that's really good for us as an industry as a whole, be you an insurer or be you an advisor. I think those kind of conversations where the customer is front and centre and at the heart of everything we do is always going to be a good thing. We started to see more output that helped to address that. So we saw some claims reports from insurers that hadn't done claims reports before, and we started to see lots more really useful customer-centric information from insurers that we had advisors then could use to really demonstrate the value of insurance and protection to clients, which was really good to see, and I hope that continues. No one seemed to be resting on their laurels, which was great to see. Everyone's pushing forward. There's always insurers are constantly looking at their offering and saying, you know, what can we do better? Be that increasing the scope of what they cover within something like a critical illness contract, looking at the actual definitions for claims and, you know, can we improve those? Can we get to a position where more people are able to benefit? Value-added services, constant reviewing of those. Are the things here that we can add that would really benefit people? So there feels like a lot of weight behind that innovation piece, a lot of people looking at what they're doing and saying very actively, can we be better? Rather than saying, you know, actually what we're doing is good enough. And I think that was nice to see. And I hope that continues into 2025 as well.
Thanks, Scott. Some really, really valid input there. Something I just want to touch on with what you mentioned, and, you know, guys, everyone on today's forum, you know, this is an interactive session. So feel free to chip in and add your comments, take yourself off of mute and so on. Something I just wanted to draw on, Scott, was the claims reports. So yep. You mentioned, you know, and I think, you know, the claims reports are great. You know, they really do sort of show what the protection industry is doing and what, you know, what the provider should be doing ultimately. What would you say, and again, you know, let's open this up to the room, what's missing from those reports? So what would you like to see from claims reports that perhaps you're not getting?
There's a great question.
Sorry, it's the last one, so I had to throw one in there, didn't I?
Never apologise for a great question, Jo. I think it's not a case of any one thing missing from all of them. I think because they're so varied, what you get is you get some really good information from one report, you get some really good information from another report, but it's always looking at things with a slightly different lens, a slightly different angle. There's bits that, you know, that's great information from LV, but it's not replayed in the same way from Exeter, and Guardians does it differently again. The really useful information, to my mind, is the surprising stuff. It's those bits of information in those reports that make you stop and go, oh, That's really caught me off guard, because they then make actually really good social media content as well to stop people in their tracks as they doom scroll. So things like, you know, who was the youngest claimant? What's the average age of a claimant? Because it's maybe a lot younger than people think. What's the most you've paid out? What's the least you've paid out? You know, what's the longest term that someone's been claiming on an IP policy? Occupations are always great as well, because it's often quite surprising when you look at occupations and say, well, actually, you know, occupation A has more claims than anybody else. Because if these are all things that people go, hang on a minute, I'm that. And it stops people in their tracks, because people have got in their mind, you know, well, the people who claim on insurance, probably, you know, quite manual jobs. They're probably in their early to mid 50s. You know, they're probably heavy drinkers and heavy smokers and do no exercise. And that's not me. And then when you see a claim stat that says, actually, most of our claims were paid out to white collar workers in their 30s, you suddenly go, oh, hang on a minute, I got that all wrong. And I think that's the really important data that you can pull out there. Anything that breaks a misconception, I think, is really great.
Excellent. Thanks, Scott. And great to get that feedback. Can I ask, just out of curiosity, you mentioned there around sort of youngest claimant, things like that. Do you ever use the claims hub that we have on the Protection Guru website and download any of those PDFs to help you with those stories?
I might have been known to use those, yes.
Excellent. Good. Thank you.
You know, it's really useful, because it does collate all of these different facts together. So yeah. Whereas I said, you know, you've got a fact over here from LV, which is brilliant, a fact over here from Royal London, which is great. Those hubs pull it all together. So you've got one place where you can get all of these sort of, you know, almost one-liner, stop you in your track facts in one PDF. So yeah, they're great from that point of view.
Excellent, thank you. And some really, really valuable comments. And I know that we're going to hear from you again on the second half as well today, Scott.
If you can't get enough of
in terms of, we can't get enough. So no, that's why we've got you on for what's your wish list for 2025. So I'm just very, very conscious of time. So once again, thank you, Scott. I'm now going to hand over to the lovely Michael Chapman, who is the head of protection and general insurance at Dynamo. I think this is the first time we've had the pleasure of you being a speaker for us this year, isn't it, Michael?
Yeah, no pressure. And thank you, Joe.
It's good to see your face, mate.
You too. Scott, some brilliant points, mate. So first of all, just want to say, Michael Chapman, no relation to Matt Chapman, as famous as he is. Love the guy. Well, we all do. the three things that kind of what I wanted to touch on today were added value benefits, reasons why letters, and product introductions. So I think the industry has been really good in 2024 on focusing on the added value benefits. I think education from providers has been great. It's also been great, the innovations that have come into the industry with providers trying to improve their added value services and how it can be more applicable to clients. What I wanted to do was just touch on a couple of the added value benefits today, because there's so many of them we could take up the whole session. So the first one is the 24/7 remote GP access. A stat that I read in preparation for this off a BBC article was nearly 5 million patients each month in England wait more than a fortnight for a GP appointment. And I still feel that with the ever-growing waiting list on, you know, the NHS and the strain GP services and stuff like that, I still feel this point is so massive and gets overlooked. I think there needs to be more from advisors talking about this amazing benefit that's included with so many products. The other one I wanted to talk about today was the physiotherapy. So there's nearly 10 providers on the market that offer it. It's really hard to try and get an average of how much the cost is. I know you guys did an article on the physio, kind of on my research. It's a bigger variance, the same between £40 and £100, the average cost. what I'd love to see is I'd love to see providers talk about and educate advisors a little bit more as to the actual cost saving these benefits give to clients. I think we're all very good at explaining the reason why these benefits are amazing. And that is suitable for a lot of clientele, but you have a different clientele that need to know how they're money orientated. They need to know they're getting value for money, and value for money, it comes in cost as well as what it, you know, real life stories. So that's my bit on added value benefits. Things that the industry, I think, hasn't done that great in 2024 is the reasons why letters. So we deal at Dynamo, we deal with a lot of impaired lives, so clients that have tried to get cover, not been able to. You know, that we deal with a lot, well, all of our clients are mortgage clients, so they're clients that have a need, they're clients that have an appetite to protect, and unfortunately because of their health they struggle to get cover. One of the biggest barriers that we face at the moment is the inconsistency across the market with all the providers on how they you know, what they, the reasons why clients actually have been declined. I appreciate that sometimes the medical disclosures need to be referred, you know, clients need to be referred back to the GP, but it's such a variance from provider A to provider Z on how they disclose that information, how easy it is for the client to get, how easy it is for the broker to get and the advisor to get. And I feel that process, it's adding an extra hurdle, and we could improve that. And then the last positive, well, I say last, but it's a few positives in the last bit. So product introductions. So it's great to see that there's been a couple of providers enter the IP market. Obviously, there's been such a focus on IP this year, which is fantastic because it's an amazing product. And it's nice to see a couple of other providers jumping in. I think what that will do in itself is make the big players in that area kind of look inwards and hopefully create some innovation to, you know, to stay competitive in that area. It is also great to see that MetLife are having more of a presence in the market. I like that they are offering quite disruptive products compared to what everyone else offers. And I do love the whole protection puzzle piece. I think it's brilliant. I'm looking forward to seeing how that kind of shapes other providers' products and offerings moving forward. Children's PIC has been a massive piece, and it's nice now that we, you know, it's not just tied to KIC. There are providers that only offer IP that are offering children's KIC and offering life with children's KIC. It just, all of these changes are encouraging positive outcomes for clients, better equipping advisors to give full recommendations instead of part recommendations. And the last one I wanted to do was point out was that I'm really happy to see that we've got a provider coming in with bump cover, which I know Emma Astley's been kind of a big driver for this change. I love the fact that our industry, you know, spends the time to recognise when there is a change that needs to be had, and actually listens. Hopefully, some of our wishes later will also be heard, and we can bring some positive change there as well.
Thanks, Michael. And, you know, I think definitely when we look at the 2025 wish list, it's, you know, it's a great opportunity for providers to listen to what, you know, what you want and what your clients want. So I'm sure it will be heard. Scott, sorry to jump straight back on you, but you've just popped a comment in the chat. And it's great to see that we're getting a bit of interaction. So if anyone wants to take themselves off of mute, feel free. Want to make sure that we get the best value out of today's session. But Scott, can you just give us a little bit more meat on the bone, please?
What, around the mortgage bit, the mortgage bit, yes, that we were just chatting about? Yeah, so
yes, thank you.
David put in a really good comment about lenders and early repayment charges. So obviously there is the facility for a lender to charge a penalty fee if a mortgage is redeemed early. And obviously using a life insurance policy to pay off the mortgage following someone's death is technically an early redemption of the mortgage. Certainly when I was at a lender and with the lenders that I've spoken to, the vast majority tend to waive an early redemption charge if that mortgage is being redeemed by a life insurance policy, or even if it's being redeemed by a critical illness policy in most cases. It's generally not written into the terms. It's something that they'd like to keep as their gift. But, you know, thinking of it from a logical point of view, the PR around, you know, widow has to sell house because bank refuses to waive penalty fee is not a headline that any lender particularly wants associated with them. So I can't imagine, unless they've hired Greg Wallace's PR team, anyone particularly going for that route. The caveat I will throw in there is obviously a number of lenders will securitize their mortgage books. So there are a number of mortgages that are no longer owned by the originating lender. They're owned by an investment house. Those investment houses have got a lot less, they've got a lot less PR collateral to be concerned about, because they're not household names. They're not out there generating mortgages in their own name. So they could probably be a little bit more difficult and dig their heels in if they really wanted to. But it's not something I've heard of happening in the mortgage market. So I think the vast majority are taking the very correct tact of waiving the ERC in that situation.